Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4, it is Understanding Autism, starring Paul Loudon and Kim Isaac. Guys, how are you?
Great. Doing all right.
All right. One great and one doing all right. All right. That sounds like a song we could make. But, Paul, you're always flying in from Texas. How was the flight?
That was pretty good.
And you ate at one of my favorite restaurants, NYPD, last night.
Yeah.
Good
pizza.
Pretty
good pizza.
I love that pizza. I think I'm going to go right after the show. Anyway, we got a great show today, and all the shows are great. But this is really interesting. I think autism and dating. Wow, I hope I hear a lot of stories about dating. Anyway, who wants to start on this one?
Well, you know, first I want to say, you know, we really appreciate our Facebook followers. We got a lot of good feedback a couple of months ago about topics people were interested in, and this was one of them. And so wanted to make sure that we give this good attention, and actually tomorrow's show is also geared towards teens and young adults and might have a little bit of dating in it too. So I'm excited that this month we've heard our followers, and we're responding, and we're excited about it. So we are talking about dating. And, you know, I guess I kind of wanted to preface all of this is, you know, dating is a really tough thing under the best of circumstances. You know, even when people are confident and have skills and have, you know, advantages in terms of understanding people in the world easily, I mean, dating is still a very dynamic process. And it's difficult for anybody. And I think where it presents additional challenges for people with autism is, you know, coming from a different social understanding or, you know, a different social perspective or different world perspective. You know, people have processed things differently. And so sometimes people with autism are walking into dating or, you know, even friendships with a very different way of seeing the world and understanding things. And so that's where it presents a little bit of an extra challenge is, you know, relating to people. And, you know, and the other thing is, actually, I forgot to mention this to Paul, but, you know, sometimes people on the spectrum are only comfortable dating people on the spectrum. And sometimes, actually, it's the other way around. So, anyway, we're going to talk about dating. And I guess I wanted to share that I did look up some definitions of dating because when I thought about it for myself, I was like, yeah, what is dating, actually? Actually, wait a minute. Here in the studio, how would you guys define dating before I give the formal definition?
Well, Paul, you want to go first? You want me to give it a shot?
I'd like to see what you've got.
Okay. It's like a poker game. I'll show my cards. Well, I haven't looked it up, but define dating, I would say, there's probably a strict definition. There's a connotation to it, the meaning you place on it. But I would say, basically, two people getting together to get to know one another, pretty much. Having fun in the process and doing things in different contexts in which to get to know people, their behaviors in various contexts. The problem, and I'll just take it one step further and then we could talk about it later, is that if you go into dating, and the connotation, I think, of dating is be on your best behavior. You don't get to know the person.
We were just talking about that, actually.
I think that's the problem. And,
it is
but
a problem.
The strictest definition of dating is get to know them, so don't be on your best behavior. Just be who you are. That's right. What I say, Paul.
Okay, so dating is a tough one. I'd start with what's probably a very clinical definition that I thought of, and that would be time spent person to person assessing romantic compatibility.
Wow, you made that
and
up.
That one, yeah. And that one's a very
it
sort of
like that.
Clinical sounding one. And that's kind of the traditional view of dating for a lot of people is two people doing things together to see if they want to take a relationship from where it is and make it more serious in some way or another.
So it's interesting though, you said assessing romantic compatibility. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
So the question is, should it be other things too, not just romantic compatibility, but overall compatibility when there's no romance.
Well, that's the thing with a lot of, you know, modern dating, younger people and stuff especially, is that, you know, the idea of what a relationship is, whether they're looking for marriage, whether dating is something that's supposed to go somewhere, or whether dating is something that's supposed to be fun in its own right, is so very fluid now that any definition we get for dating, any definition we have for dating, is going to fall contrary to why someone else out there is dating. So dating is pretty much what two people make of it, I think, is that dating is very much just something that two people do together that they both agree is called dating. I mean, that's it. And that's one of the important things with what we're getting into is that people on the spectrum often have very set views on things, very limited and concrete views. And a lot of what we see as dating in the media is, you know, very straightforward. You know, boy meets girl, boy asks girl on date, girl is doubtful, boy does something, girl changes her mind, they have two good dates, and then cut 6 years, 6 months later, and they're getting married or whatever. That it's very hard, you know, to date when you're not sure why you're dating or what dating is. And so, you know, that's one of the questions to ask yourself before you get started is, why am I dating? But another is, you know, the person that I want to ask out, why are they dating? So it's very much a mutual thing, and you need to be at a level of understanding where you can realize that you might be dating for different reasons than they are, and that's something that you both need to, you know, discuss.
I mean, there's a lot of communication and self-awareness and understanding that needs, you know, to happen. And something that occurred to me, and do you guys want the definitions I found, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just tell you. So I had two. One was a form of courtship consisting of social activities done by two people with the aim of assessing the other's suitability as partners in an intimate relationship / spouse. That was one definition. And then another short one was a trial towards a more permanent relationship. And what really struck me about these definitions, and when I really stopped to think about it, was what a process it really is. And process is very difficult sometimes for people on the spectrum, for some people, because they do have this set, sometimes, you know, vision of, okay, I'm the age that I am, you know, I'm supposed to be dating, I see everybody around me dating, I want to fit in, so I need to start dating, type thing. That's one example. That's not how it is every time. And actually, I mean, I think that's true of people off the spectrum sometimes too, but I think people on the spectrum, they do kind of hold on to it in more of a concrete, you know, manner. But what happens is it produces a lot of anxiety if you don't slow down to really, you know, kind of self-check and ask yourself these questions and realize that this is, you know, it's a process. And once you learn more about yourself and what you want, it's going to help you to be more successful in the process, you know. So process, that was kind of a key word that I highlighted in my thoughts on dating.
How about, well, I like that. Yeah, the process makes sense. And also the elements maybe of the process. For example, a lot of people date and it's sort of an illusion. And it's sort of the romantic part. That's all the ads show that, from beer commercials to hamburgers.
It's very influential.
Very. And the elements are, if you focus in on it, not just the goal, well, it's part of the goal, I guess. Should dating include really being just strictly friends in that context?
Well, that's a good point that you bring up, because I think sometimes people on the spectrum, they have difficulty making friends, and sometimes I want to say they sort of forget that, or maybe they don't want to go there. Maybe it can be stressful or painful or anxiety-producing, and then they skip to, I'm just going to start dating, not realizing that, you know, the person you're dating or the person you know you're going to end up with, you need to have some kind of friendship on some level. And so sometimes that sort of single channel processing of, okay, this is dating, and it's in a different style than friendship is. And so just remembering to kind of merge those two files, I think, is something else for people, you know, on the spectrum to consider, is it's not just that one dating is impressing the girl, or, you know, trying to get the girl to like me or marry me. There's a lot of, like you were saying, elements to it that really, without slowing yourself down to really give yourself time to think about, I'm saying it again. I know I already said it. I'm saying it again because it's important. And, you know, here's the thing I want to say, too. If you're an adult out there and, you know, you feel like you are thinking about it and there's some things you're uncertain of, it's good to go find, you know, have a trusted adult to talk to or a professional. I mean, again, dating under the best circumstances is very stressful, and it helps to have other people to talk to. And I just want to encourage adults out there, you know, don't feel like you have to navigate everything on your own. You know, you seek out some help from a trusted person, and you know, just really give yourself time and realize that the process is what's valuable, not just the outcome.
Well, what's interesting, maybe one of the shows we could take some of the elements, like how to develop a friendship. Would that be a good idea?
I think that's a great show.
How to develop a friendship? What does it mean for yourself? What are some of the beliefs that go along with developing a pure friendship? People don't date very well in America, maybe the world, but they don't date well, meaning people go in and out like a merry-go-round.
Well, I mean, a big thing that we run into is that, like I said, a lot of people don't really know why they're dating. And that's,
I agree.
That's something here in America, that's elsewhere. I'm going to start with, I grew up with Archie Comics. When I was really young, first grade, kindergarten, I was reading Archie Comics. And so that gave me a somewhat skewed vision of what dating was, because they used terms like go steady. And that doesn't even exist by the time I got to high school. Like, you know, there was nothing like that. And so I had this picture of what dating was that by the time I was of a dating age was completely askew with the world around me and led me to spend a lot of time just trying to figure out, well, wait, what is it really, you know? But the thing is most people don't know what it is really. They're not sure why they're dating. Some people, the goal is that end relationship, that some people date to get married. Some people date to find their special someone. Some people date because they don't want to be alone. And so they'll move from person to person because they don't want to just spend time just with themselves. And for them, there's something different spending time with friends versus spending time with a boyfriend or girlfriend. And, you know, one thing about dating, from my perspective, is that it's really about moving from trying to impress someone, which is what starts dating, is trying to impress someone enough that they want to give you a chance, to trying to understand someone. And a lot of people don't get to that second step of trying to understand someone. They spend the whole time trying to impress someone, and they get worn out, and there's just not much there, and then the relationships fall apart. And sometimes you try to understand someone and you understand that you really don't fit together. But a lot of people, they're too focused on the relationship and not why they're having the relationship. And so all of this doesn't work for them because a lot of times it feels like people just don't know why they're there. They're doing the steps. And this is people on the spectrum and off, is that they're walking through the steps, but they haven't worked out why they started walking in that direction in the first place.
And I think I think, you know, along the lines of what you're saying, you know, I think approaching things with an element of curiosity is very important. So, you know, I tell people, whether it's friends or dating really, is, you know, what can I learn about this person? You know, because really, I mean, that is key. You know, what can I learn about them so that I can put some pieces together and understand them better, you know, where they're coming from and who they are. But the learning really has to happen first, so that you have some information to base any kind of decision, you know, off of. And it's learning. You have to decide what it is you want to learn, too. Because as Paul was saying, you know, there's kind of skills involved in dating, which is things that I've seen a lot, you know, being taught a lot, you know, how to ask someone on a date, when it's appropriate type stuff. And that is needed. But the problem is the focus isn't where it needs to be for what a relationship really means and is, and I think it's just a big paradigm shift in how someone may think of dating.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. Also, there's another element I believe is important, not only what you can learn about the other person, but what you can learn about yourself.
Absolutely.
Because what happens, people have these patterns, and it's like, wow, every you know, relationship ends up a certain way. Well, you're the only common element, and so look deeply within yourself and say, wait, maybe I have a certain pattern. Maybe I can learn from. Also, in addition to what Paul said, you know, different reasons to date, I think another big reason, especially in America, is ego. I think maybe especially with guys, you know, they'll say, oh, yeah, I've dated, you know, I have three girlfriends right now. No, they do that. And I think that's a dangerous way to go.
I think the media influence is really tough because right now in this day and age in America, because there are cultural differences when it comes to dating in different countries, but, you know, a lot of people on the spectrum, they are spending a lot of time alone, you know, online or, you know, doing things that are more solo. So that a lot of their main influence isn't through interacting with a lot of people. They kind of avoid it sometimes. So when they actually get out there, it's even more foreign because they're going off things that they're seeing in the media that aren't really dynamic. And what you see in the media doesn't explain anything.
Well, and culturally, we just don't talk about dating much. I mean, when you're in high school, whatever, you're left to figure it out on your own. And, you know, arguably, we do well enough mostly as a culture of figuring it out on our own. But we have a lot of issues in regard to that. I mean, there's a lot of issues that come to light where it really would benefit people to sit them down and talk to them about dating and respecting other people and what it means to be in a relationship and what it means to do things with other people, for neurotypical people as well, that we don't spend a lot of time thinking about this. And you were talking about ego coming into it, and that's one thing, is that a lot of times it is seen as a status symbol to have a beautiful wife or to, you know, whatever, because if you're good enough, you attract a beautiful wife. But are you more concerned about attracting a beautiful wife or a wife that you really genuinely like? And for a lot of people, you know, it's sort of iffy, you know, all of that. And so you get into also this whole cultural thing where if you're a 30-year-old male and you're single, it's pretty much okay. If you're a 30-year-old female and you're single, people start asking, what's wrong with her? You know, why hasn't she gotten someone?
I know. I'm just teasing.
But no, I mean, this is a cultural thing.
No, I know.
It is cultural.
The assumption is that if you're female and single at a certain age, there's something wrong with you. If you're male and single at a certain age, you're keeping your options open. And that's part of the whole cultural thing that can confuse people on the spectrum. Because no one talks about why we're dating. And all of the cultural suggestions as to why we're dating don't give a clear message on why you should be dating, but rather what you see the most of is the bad reasons for dating. You don't really ever get talked about healthy dating and healthy relationships. You just see symbols all over the place of what's going wrong, and you think, well, that's all dating is all these stupid things that people keep doing. I mean, I hear about it, and I hear about the failures, but I'm just assuming that they're trying to do the right thing, and it's screwing up, rather than they're starting from the wrong point.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned. I agree with you culturally. If you're a 30-year-old guy, it's okay. 30-year-old woman, it's a little
different.
What if
you're a 60-year-old guy?
Yeah, but what I was going to say, actually you read my mind, is that even a 40- or 50-year-old man or woman that's never been married, people look at that like, why? You know, that's something too.
If you're 50 and you have an ex-wife, then that's a little more normal than 50 and not.
Well, exactly.
How do we know? This is the thing. Maybe we should take a short break, but
yeah.
I think the point we're making too is there's a lot of unwritten rules and cultural things that are involved in dating. So why don't we talk about that after the break?
Unwritten rules coming right up, and then I'm going to do a little surprise because I give seminars called How to Recognize Red Flags and Potential Partners. I think you'll be interested in this. When we come back, we will talk about it. This is Breakthrough Thinking, Understanding Autism, starring Paul Alden and Kim Isaac. We will be right back.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Reidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. And, of course, every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, here right here at Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. You can hear Understanding Autism starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. Paul, all the way from Houston, Texas. We're talking about autism and dating. This is a great topic. It can help anyone. And where we left off was a couple things, unwritten rules. And Kim, you were talking about unwritten rules. I was talking about how to recognize red flags in potential partners. We'll get into that real briefly in a second. Unwritten rules, yeah. People, the rules are sort of, the unwritten ones are the ones you see through the media a lot. Also, peer pressure, I think, has some application here, too.
It does. And when I was thinking of unwritten rules, although that definitely falls into it, you know, I was thinking of in general, when we think about autism and some of the core deficits, you know, being able to, I guess you could say, read people, for lack of a better word, and being able to put together communications that people are presenting in different modalities. So, you know, a person, like, for example, maybe you're on a date and someone's saying something nice to be polite, but their body language is completely bored and they're just trying to be nice and not hurt your feelings, but they're giving one communication with their body and another with their words, and people on the spectrum will tend to go with the words. So they may be thinking, oh, she does like me or he does like me because of this, when, you know, really more was going on. And so I think, and this is talked about a lot in some of the social skills type books out there for people on the spectrum, is, you know, learning that communication is more than just words. And it may not make a lot of sense, and it may seem hard and annoying, but But there are a lot of people out there that really, I mean, communication is 80% nonverbal. And that's a hard thing for people on the spectrum to realize, to remember, you know, and to use as information. And so when I say unwritten rules, I think part of what I'm trying to say is just to see communication in a bigger picture so that, you know, you don't run into as many, you know, potential misunderstandings or, you know, like I've had examples where, you know, a person on the spectrum went out on a date and, again, it got this idea that, you know, oh, she said this and she said this, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, I'm listening, and I wasn't there, so I don't know the full story. But, you know, as it turns out, he's thinking, I don't know, you know, and this happens actually on the spectrum too, but, you know, what did I do wrong? She said one thing, and I kind of asked, I said, did you notice, like, was she turned towards you? Was she, you know, and I don't like to use this word, making eye contact. You know, I was trying to get more information. And he goes, I don't know. You know, I don't remember. And, you know, it just kind of made me realize how important it is to be aware of where your attention should be, you know, in order to receive information from a person, in order to understand better where they're coming from.
That, you know, that's an interesting point. Yeah, the nonverbal part. So key. And I just remembered how important that would be. And, if, you know, various people on the spectrum, if they don't have develop those skills yet.
And not just that, but, you know, so I've seen people that, you know, they go, okay, I need to look at body language or facial or tone or, you know, I need to look at those things. But what I hear often is, okay, I'm able to see those things, but putting them all together is very difficult. And the thing that we do quite naturally is we're able to receive a communication as one flow, you know, as kind of a burst of communication. So I can watch you and see, okay, you're nodding, that means you understand, and you're like, I mean, it comes in at once. But for some people on the spectrum, and maybe Paul, you can elaborate too, is some I've heard that they have to process, you know, the face, then the eyes, then the posture. I mean, it's like putting together actively a puzzle, which would make it so very hard and, you know, exhausting, I would imagine.
I would have to say that's close, but for me, the feeling I get is more like a lot of it doesn't come in except when you're looking for it. So the face isn't even something that really necessarily registers unless part of your brain goes, now look at the mouth, now look at the eyes. So it's not a case of it all comes in, but it comes in as multiple different channels so much as you can only sort of see one or two channels at once, so you're moving between them constantly.
And I've heard that too. I mean, I've heard a lot of different
things.
It's
hard to describe, really,
yeah,
as part of the problem. But
I would imagine.
That's obviously one of the difficulties that can show up with dating is that you're usually, as someone on the autism spectrum, forced to be communicating in someone else's field of comfort. And so dating, which is supposed to be an enjoyable experience, is also very much about communication, which is a very difficult experience for someone on the autism spectrum. So as someone who's on the spectrum, finding enjoyable and comfortable dates can be pretty difficult too.
Right. And so that's a big deal.
And then, you know, so if all of your dates are uncomfortable and you have no outside reference, you kind of might think, well, no one really likes this part of it. We must be doing it for the reason of getting a boyfriend or getting married or whatever, because why would anyone do this otherwise? So it's hard to recognize that there's dating for fun when most of the dating you're doing doesn't really seem to be any more fun than anything else you've done or spending time with friends.
I think too. Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, you know, another thing is when that sort of thing happens, a person, because maybe they're not picking up certain messages that another person is sending, they attribute it to themselves. Like, nobody likes me. Nobody wants to be around me. No, you know, and so they're not really gaining the learning that comes from dating when they're kind of coming from a really different awareness and a really different place.
That's what I was going to say. Where's the focus? And you took it, that was well said, because what I wrote down is, I wonder if you're a guy, if your focus is always on, I wonder if she likes me, then the tension is on you, which could create a little bit more tension, and it could create a behavior of desperation versus, especially if you want her to like you, or you got to change the focus somehow.
Well,
it's not whether she likes you or not, whether, are you having a good time? Am I being kind? Am I being sincere? You know, you could place focuses on different filters.
Well, for people on the spectrum, though, what I've heard is they're focusing so much on what they've been taught to do, quote-unquote, right, where it's like, am I saying the right things? I said, how are you? I asked about their job. You know, they're going through a checklist.
A big part of that, again, comes back to the way we learn about dating. As someone in the 10 to 15 years old age group, most of what you learn about dating is through TV shows. And in TV shows, if you're on the autism spectrum, you're usually a bit of an outcast. And the outcast kid who wants to date the pretty girl has a series of steps he has to go through. He has to impress her. He has to take her out on dates and do the right things. And TV pretty much puts, for a male, puts all of the weight on getting the pretty girl on what the male does, how he impresses her, because she's not interested in first. As a female, often it's a little different that, you know, you've got the scenes where the girls give her the makeover and suddenly she looks completely different and the handsome guy is interested in her. But the thing is TV shows, because every single TV show that addresses dating addresses it in almost the same way, we sort of begin to see this is how dating works, especially if you're someone who's limited to very concrete thinking and you can't necessarily as easily tell the lines between entertainment and accurate reflections of the real world. So you get this idea of what dating is supposed to be like, and it's not even remotely accurate, but you're sitting there going, okay, I went on a date with this girl, she doesn't like me. The TV has told me to be more persistent rather than TV has told me to accept that she has opinions. And if she doesn't like me, she doesn't like me.
Right.
You know?
And you know, too, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, I think that's totally.
TV shows never show any harm coming from being too persistent.
Right.
Being too persistent eventually gets you the girl.
That's right.
The way it works.
And that's really, that's not a good message for, I mean, it is in terms of the commitment and the dedication to growing and learning, but that's not what's being enforced. And one of the problems I've seen with a lot of therapies out there is they are focused on that same thing, is if you do this right, this is what you say, this is what you do, you dress nice, you bring the flowers. And so for somebody that is a concrete thinker and sometimes a single-channel processor, which is just focusing on one thing at a time, that is the hyper-focus, you know, of the date. And I think that can do a lot of I'm going to say damage, that's such a harsh word, but I've seen that happen a lot, where it results in, you know, in really confidence-crushing things, because they're thinking, but I did everything I was taught. I did everything they told me, and it's not working, you know, that sort of thing. So I think it's important, that's why we have this show,
that's
to go beyond
part of
that.
The problem is that a lot of times dating is approached as, how do I get this specific girl to like me? And when you've got that concrete set of things, you're playing a role. And when dating, the only role you should be playing, the only one, is the me that I want to be. So maybe you aren't presenting how you are around your apartment, but if you're presenting an idealized version of you, it's the you that you want to grow into. It's the you that you aspire to be, but sometimes aren't strong enough to always be. You know, and that's part of the problem, is that it's not about getting this girl. It's about finding a girl that I like who also likes me. That it's about, part of dating is looking around. It's not picking a girl and then getting her, because that dehumanizes the other person. That says, your wishes and this aren't important. I've decided you're my target. It's silly. Is that it's finding another person with a two-way compatibility. And that means a lot of failed dates. But, you know, and that's another thing, is that a lot of times, especially on the spectrum, you see failed dates as a failure because, again, no one's talked to you and said, look, here's the thing about dating. Every single person you date but one, at the very best, at the very, very best, you are not going to end up with every single one of them but one.
Right.
Only one will you end up with. And that's the best case. You get one person who wants to be with you. The worst case is you don't find any, but if you aren't dating, or if you aren't dating right, it's the same case. You don't find any. So you have to take chances, and taking chances is difficult. But to put it in concrete terms, if you don't take a chance, then you're just as bad off as if you take the chance and fail. I mean, there's no penalty. You don't get points marked against you if you ask someone out and they turn you down. You're just not dating them, which is exactly where you were before you asked them out. But no one sits down and talks with this stuff with you. So we get this picture of dating that we've cobbled together from movies and media and TV, and honestly in high school, well, yeah, but in high school a lot, you know, the way that your neurotypical guys around you have bragged about dating, and a lot of times there's a lot of exaggeration there because they just want to sound like the manly guy who, you know, did everything right. So it's really hard not to get a distorted picture of dating, and we don't have a culture where we talk about it with each other. Guys especially don't talk about it with other guys, you know. I can't say what girl talk is. I know they talk about dating sometimes because everyone talks about dating sometimes, but all I know is the stereotypical picture from TV, and I have my doubts as to the accuracy of that picture. So, but it's really very much a culture of we have no idea what we're doing, and we're muddling through it, and we're
passing
a lot
that
of,
on to people.
So, and we're using a lot of social signs to figure things out. And that's the area where someone with autism is weak. But it harms people who aren't on the spectrum, too, because they get a lot of things wrong, and they end up hurting other people unnecessarily. So this is one of those areas where, autistic or not, we really need to improve talking with our kids about dating and what we tell them and how we communicate and what dating is about, why we're doing it, because it's one of those things where you can't use concrete signs. But even if you want to figure out concrete signs, because there are things you might want to remember to do, you know, remember to shower before a date, brush your teeth, whatever. But we need to work out our reasons for those, because just having it on a checklist doesn't help you benefit in a way that's saying, well, I'm going to brush my teeth before I go and shower before I go because I want to be the kind of person who smells good, rather than I want her to like me for smelling good today. And then once we're together, I don't have to do that anymore because we're not dating anymore.
Right.
You know, that it, understanding why you're doing these things and working out what you want is very much a key part in it, both for people on the spectrum and off the spectrum. But when you're on the spectrum, it's a lot harder to work out what you want because it is a social relationship, and that's one of those areas where we don't always get those.
Right. I think let's take a short break. Actually, we have so much to talk about. I love this discussion. But let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about dating on Understanding Autism.
Weidenauer, Heitzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heitzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Birenbaum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs. And if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum & Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.riiadvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is Understanding Autism live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, starring Paul Loudon and Kim Isaac. Autism and dating is the topic. Very interesting so far. I wanted to say a couple things. Paul, you mentioned about risk, and I can't remember, it was obviously in the context of dating, but what came to mind when you said that is something you were suggesting, you know, get out there and risk a little, because if you don't, you'll never know. And the saying for that, it's better to have loved and lost than never have loved at all. Ever hear of that?
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, is that similar?
No.
No. That's what I got out of that.
Wait, okay.
It's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all.
Yeah, what is your opinion on that, Paul? Because this is something I know you would inspire me on, something you would think of something that I never would have on that comment.
Yeah.
What is it?
And how does it relate to the risk comment?
But okay, I'm going to go with the risk comment first.
Yeah.
Is that the idea of the risk comment is that you're not dating someone right now, just hypothetically. Person A is not dating anyone. If they never ask anyone out, they're always going to be not dating anyone. If they ask someone out and get rejected, they're still not dating anyone.
He's doing mathematically.
So, yeah, no, it's math here. But it's basic logic is that if you get rejected, you're not any worse off than before you started because you're still not dating that person. So,
okay.
So you don't lose anything by asking someone other than maybe a little bit of pride. And if you can put that pride aside, you don't lose anything. There is nothing at risk because you don't end up like negative one person where you're now, you know, dating less people than zero. You're just not dating anyone. So it's one of those situations where the only thing at stake is anything you imagine to be at stake. But there's nothing real. There's nothing about your personal status that's really at stake. So asking someone out is not a risky proposition. It really isn't. You're not risking anything.
So you're quantifying it.
There's a lot of emotion wrapping
it.
But the thing is that if you start thinking about it that way, it might make it easier to put some of that aside.
Okay.
That, you know, that if you really start looking at it and start thinking about it from the sort of the rational point of view, maybe that'll give you the tools to sort of minimize the anxiety because you're not really risking that much.
So as Wayne Gretzky said, you always miss 100%
of the shots you don't take.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
All right. Well, yeah. I like Wayne Gretzky as a player. So there we go.
Now, the better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. That one is very personal because I think that it's true in the sense that it's better to have loved someone and then genuinely lost them where, you know, maybe, you know, you have a family member that you remember and have some very strong memories for, or maybe you were married and, you know, you outlived your significant other, that kind of love and loss. no question. But a lot of people apply it to the better in love and lust where I had a crush on this girl, but she turned me down. That's not loving. That, you know, the better in love that lost and lost is really very much about loving someone. And there's no question that experiencing real love for someone is a significant and, for most people, life-changing event where you really develop this deep love, and it leaves a change on your personality afterwards, where having experienced that, you are now a new and different person. But for a lot of people, they say that as a way of minimizing heartbreak over a breakup or something, and it's really,
it's a cop-out.
Well, it's not just a cop-out, but, you know, the heartbreak over a breakup, you probably want to look at it and try to grow from it, not try to preserve it as this, you know, tragic loss, but rather, well, what went wrong? Because if a breakup happens, odds are good that elements of it involve both of you. Even if you did nothing wrong, there was something about you that she didn't like. And that's something that you should know, whether it's something that you disagree with or agree with. You know, if someone doesn't like the fact that I spend a lot of time on the internet, but I'm okay with it, I still need to know that that's something some people don't like, because moving forward, it might be something that I want to be upfront about with someone earlier on, because it's like, well, I didn't realize that this was, you know, a trait that some people found negative, but now I know that. So, you know, trivializing and minimizing, you know, a failed relationship as something like that doesn't really get us analytical about it. And I think that there is sort of a benefit to dating people and then looking at it as a growth experience. And again, that's, I think a lot of what would help people on the autism spectrum is just having someone to talk with these things about, that a lot of times they're left on their own to figure out what went wrong. And honestly, it'd be best if they could talk with the person who broke up with them, but, you know,
it doesn't always
work out that way, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
In context of what Paul was saying, that could be another show. What is love? I mean, that's somewhat what you're saying, is that you don't want to trivialize it. So if it's, you know, if it was a crush versus true deep love, that's what you're pretty much communicating. That might be another show.
I think the question of what is love, though, is philosophers have been working on it since pretty much the dawn of communication, and we've never figured it out. So us trying to tackle that on our show might be a little difficult.
Oh, what I was going to say, though, is I think the idea of learning and growing from experience is something in general that is often a core deficit of autism, is picking out whether it's a relationship or an experience, you know, what is an element of this that I can, what is the most important element, and I need to save that and use it for later. And that's something that's very hard for people on the spectrum. They tend not to do that. They tend not to have that, you know, I guess that self-propelling focus, or even knowing that that's possible. I mean, I've met people that didn't know that they could evaluate and analyze something and learn something from it. I mean, there is a huge range, and but I've seen that before. But I found, relationships or not, that a lot of the people I work with have a difficult time, you know, taking experience in learning from it and using something they've learned for later. Like taking that with them.
Well, let me mention in context to that, sort of extending it out real quickly on red flags and potential partners, how to recognize red flags and potential partners. You can both comment how this might apply or not to the autism spectrum. Most people, when I talk about that, the first hour of the seminar is who's ever been in a relationship and who's ever seen red flags, and everyone's jumping up and down, unless they just recently broke up, and they go, oh, yeah, I went out with a drug addict, and I went out with someone controlling, and I went out with someone abusive. And so they're all seem to be fairly excited to get this out, and those are all the external red flags. But then the real work starts. I go, well, who chose that person? It's the internal red flags what the seminar is about. What are the filters you're using, unconscious attraction strategies and unconscious selection criteria, are bringing these people to you? That's the real question. Now, it may or may not apply right on with autism spectrum. Maybe it does, but it's a valuable lesson to look inward. How did and why did you choose them at an unconscious level? Try to bring it conscious. It's very powerful.
Well, and that is, unfortunately, that is a huge, with the exception of Paul.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are other, no, I know there's other people out there too. Paul has a very different, I guess, ability in that area.
Yeah.
But most of the people that I see, that you know, point of reflection and analyzing and understanding oneself is not part of a daily sort of thought process like it might be for us on whatever level.
Yeah.
Some people aren't, I mean, Paul happens to be quite motivated by problem solving and figuring things out and finding better ways and things like that. That's something that's of interest to him. That's not usually common. But it's also
not even with people that are not on the spectrum.
Well, that's true. One big problem is that how we choose people a lot of the times, especially the first few times we try to choose people, is based again on external influences. I will say the first girl that I tried to date in high school, she was the girl in my class who was most like Betty from Archie Comics. That was how I picked who I was interested in, is that I saw a lot of similarities, and I'd long since sort of seen Betty as the good one of the two choices in Archie Comics. So that it was that simple. And that didn't work out well, but mostly she was too polite to ever turn me down, so I kept asking her on dates, and I had no idea that she wasn't interested in me.
Well, that's interesting.
So it took a while for me to figure out what was going on. But it's one of those things where my entire choice was not based on what am I looking for in a person, but rather what do I think I'm supposed to be looking for in a person.
And that's most likely what I see. I mean, you've grown
quite a lot
in that.
Well,
but,
I mean, that was 15, 16 years ago. So.
But that's more of a common thing that I'm seeing. So, but yeah, no, that's interesting. I didn't know that about you. Very interesting.
There's a lot of things that have happened. I mean, I have 30 years of life.
I know.
It would take me 30 years to tell you all about it, and I'd have another 30 years to tell you. So.
Well, it's something to think about, and it could be applicable to some, maybe to not others, but even people off the spectrum. It's very challenging. They just want to get in their date. They don't want to have to do self-improvement. I think that's
or they don't know how valuable it is. And I guess this leads us, you know, towards the end of the show is some tips that I have, and everybody can chime in. You know, I have kind of two sets of tips. One is, you know, for parents who have teens and young adults, whether they're expressing interest or not, it's a really good idea to initiate communication about relationships as they're approaching that age and just, you know, talking with them a little bit and learning about them. You know, what do you know about this? You know, have you ever thought about this? And just kind of getting a little bit of insight from your teen or young adult and talking to them about it and giving them a little bit of this understanding, you know, sharing some of this insight with them. Now, for some people, you know, part of the tips might involve, and this is everybody's so different, but, you know, some of it might involve they need to learn some skills. Some of it might be, you know, maybe you could help them with some self-examination. You know, have you ever thought about this? And why don't you think about this? And part of it is really with dating, too, is getting to know yourself and understanding yourself. And so that's another thing that parents can do to help, you know, their loved one with autism is just kind of helping them focus on, you know, learning about themselves. And you can go through that together. You can share things about yourself, you know, be a model of that, and kind of side by side with them on doing that. You know, if you're an adult on the spectrum, again, I'm going to say, you know, self-awareness is just key. I mean, it really is. And sometimes it's a really hard thing to hear, especially when adults on the spectrum, they work so hard every day as it is just to get to be integrated into this world. And so many of the people I work with, they're just such pure-hearted, hard-working people that don't get the credit they deserve. And so sometimes when you tell someone on the spectrum, okay, well, let's work on this, sometimes it's just too exhausting to think about, you know, and they want to move on to just, no, let's make this happen, which is totally understandable. But I think if you are an adult on the spectrum focusing on, you know what, I need to slow down, I need to learn about myself, you know, I need to become more aware of what I understand about me, what I understand about the world, you know, talk to some kind of trusted, you know, adult or seek out, you know, support groups and things like that, because you do need to talk to other people about it. And, you know, another issue that comes up is, you know, it's also uncomfortable for a lot of adults to disclose their diagnosis, you know, to date. They might meet someone that's not on the spectrum and they're kind of afraid, you know, to try or, you know, but I just encourage people out there to really, you know, communicate about yourself to others. It actually creates such a so much better of an outcome than you would realize, because people would understand you better. You know, self-disclosing and just explaining things about yourself, you know, this is hard for me, I may not read this well, or, you know, just sharing that is going to be so helpful to how people are going to respond to you and be open, you know, to learning about you. I think that's, you know, I can't encourage that enough. And what I see, though, is kind of it's polarized. I work with some people that are like, oh, it's a relief to disclose and, you know, my diagnosis, and, you know, I want to do it, and everywhere I go, I want to do it. And then I have some people that are like, no, I don't want to be labeled. I don't want, and yeah, you do run that risk. However, it's interactively, relationally, is going to be so much better, you know, for you to create that open door for understanding and learning, because now you're creating an opportunity for someone to learn about you, which is what you want to do for the other person, and it looks like you want to say something.
I do, because that's very interesting to me. The question I have for you and or Paul is, when do you disclose you're on the spectrum, and how do you disclose it? Because you're right about labels. People, because we've talked about it in other shows, movies, they sort of give a different impression about the spectrum. When and how? Let's start with you, Kim.
Oh, okay. I'm going to deflect the
call.
I'd be curious see what Kim says.
Okay.
I think I've told my thoughts on this a few times on the show
you
in
have.
Other contexts. So.
You have. No, I mean, what I'm thinking is first you have to have a pretty good understanding of yourself, though, because it's like, well, what are you going to disclose? You know, what am I going to say to someone? You don't just want to say, I want you to know I have autism.
And when? Is it the first meeting?
Right. Exactly. Well, yeah, let's get to that part.
Okay.
But I'm thinking is, you know, not focusing on the label, but focusing more on what are my difficulties. Those are the things to share, not focusing on I have autism, you should know I have autism. You know,
okay.
It's really not about the label. It's about what you want people to understand about you. And so I encourage people, you know, you can throw in the autism so it maybe makes a little more sense to someone. You can say, you know, I have a great deal of difficulty looking at you and listening at the same time. So I'm not trying to be rude. I am paying attention, but it's hard for me to do both. That kind of disclosure. So somebody's perceiving you, you know, in a way where they can learn about you and not inadvertently be put off by you.
And when do you do this?
Well, and that's a judgment call. It really is, because, you know, and everybody's so different. I mean, you have to, again, you have to be kind of prepared of what you're going to say. You have to decide, you know, which scenarios it may be called for. And when you know yourself well enough to know, you may be able to make that judgment a little bit easier. But again, if you don't, you know, talk to somebody about it. And definitely, you know, don't feel like you're all alone in that.
So, Paul, quick response, a couple of minutes left.
Like I said, dating is about understanding each other. So you can't understand someone without disclosure of that sort of thing. I mean, it's just one of those things. You may not want to disclose the diagnosis just flat out, oh, I've been diagnosed with autism on first meeting or whatever, but you should, as the opportunities arrive, let them know about any challenges or difficulties you have. And there's no question that I think you're going to have to judge for yourself when the appropriate time to disclose is, but it's one of those things where my personal thought is let them get to know me well enough to like me. And once I'm sure or comfortable that they like me as a person, then disclose it, because then they've got a picture of me that they can then add it to. My fear always is that if I'm autistic, they're going to have a picture of autistic person, generic autistic person that they start throwing Paul traits at, things that Paul does. So it's an autistic person who does these things. Rather than Paul, who also happens to be autistic. So I want them to have a mental image of me, of who I am, what I can do, before they start mixing that with autism. So it's one of those things where there's no specific time, but give them a little time to get to know you, and once you think they know me, then start moving into the understanding bit.
Makes sense. This was a great show. It deserves really a follow-up. But tomorrow there's some follow-up. Who's your guest tomorrow?
We have a great guest. I know we have a minute left. Maybe quick. We have Debbie Weidinger from AZ Assist, which is a group, a transition resource for families of teens and young adults on the spectrum. And she's going to be talking about their organization. They have vocational and employment resources, secondary education resources, independent living, social and advocacy resources. So we're very excited to have another show geared towards the older population.
This is exciting. And, of course, tomorrow a debut show with Paul Loudon and myself on gaming.
Yeah. I don't have a good title for it yet. Obviously.
Yeah, I didn't know what to say either, but it's fun.
We want to introduce people to what gaming is like in the modern world and where it fits into our culture.
This is great. Thank you, Paul. Kim, we'll see you tomorrow. We start at 2 to 3, Paul and I, and then Understanding Autism 3 to 4. Everyone have a great night.